man, good Friday to everybody out there. Welcome to the show. Happy November 1st. Oh my goodness. I can't believe it's November already in 2019. We are down to the final 2 months of the 2010s decade, which is mind-boggling. It's fun. It's also a little nerve-wracking, if you ask me. Can you believe that, Sean? 2 months left of a decade, and then we're under a new decade.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. It's 2020. We'll talk about it in 2 months.
Yeah, it's nuts. Can't wait for it. But then, talking about what's going on today, we got a fun show. Obviously, Sean's going to have his football fantasy predictions for you. We'll give you our Sunday picks. We'll react to Thursday night football. Our pal Ian from Prop Swap will be on the phone with us here in the second hour. And then coming up this hour, of course, we will we'll talk Pack coming up here in a matter of minutes. We'll talk Formula One in the United States. I got Practice 2 on my screen right now. And we'll talk about some of the rules and regulations that Formula One has announced for the 2021 season, which is when new car designs and new rules can be enforced. The next season will be the last season of the current deal that the FIA has going on right now. So we'll take a look at that. Also give you a couple clips from the coaches show this past Wednesday in case you missed it, with Coach Norvell and Coach TJ Bruce of the baseball team. But before we get to those interviews, we can talk about those teams a little bit. Let's start talking about Nevada football, because this is a big game this week here at home. Goes down tomorrow night, the second-to-last home game of the regular season for Nevada. The only game after this is when they will host UNLV. And that'll be senior game here at home, last game of the season. Then after this game, I will go at San Diego State, have a bye week, and then at Fresno State. And I said it, I think, on Monday or Tuesday of this week, but I feel like this is a must-win for the Nevada Wolfpack. If you look at how the season has gone, and this isn't a different place for Nevada to be. They were 4-4 last year, I believe, as well, then had a really good end of the season, so they're going to need to do that again. You got to beat New Mexico at home, got to beat UNLV at home, take back the cannon, and then try to squeak out a win on the road against San Diego State or Fresno State. Honestly, the fact that San Diego State's leading the Western Division right now in the Mountain West, I feel like Fresno State might be the better shot at a road win, especially with Nevada coming off the bye week heading into that game. So, but this is where it all begins. This final run of the season all begins tomorrow night here at home against New Mexico. You got to finish it off. And the good thing for Nevada is Nevada's coming off a two-game losing streak with tough road losses against Utah State and Wyoming. But now they're at home hosting a New Mexico team coming off a five-game losing streak. And the last four of those have been in conference. So it started with a loss at Liberty, 17-10. And they lost at San Jose State, 32-21. Lost at home to Colorado State, 35-21. Lost on the road to Wyoming, 23-10. And then fell at home to Hawaii, 45-31. So this is a team that has struggled to get it together, put it together for four quarters to try and get a win. The only thing that makes me nervous about those scores and about this streak that New Mexico is on is, even though they're losing, they're scoring points. They're getting the ball into the end zone. And not that I want to rub salt into the wound of Nevada right now, but the last two games, they haven't been able to do that at all. They got one kind of cheap one at the end against Utah State, but they weren't able to get into the end zone against Wyoming. So for Nevada, try not to look at the big picture of this game while you're going into it. Take it quarter by quarter and just try to get the ball into the end zone. One drive at a time. Try to operate. Use your weapons. Carson Strong is going to be back out there. And honestly, with the way he started this season against Purdue, even the rough game they had at Oregon, the young kid stood in there and fought and to keep that team as in it as he could on the road in one of the toughest places to play in the nation. So I like the fact they're going back to Carson Strong for this game. I think at home, he's comfortable. He's got good mojo. And this team is going to look to really put it all together. And I think the key for them is going to be get in it early, because we've seen a score here from Talton in the first quarter normally. But in my opinion, you have to get at least one touchdown in the first quarter.
Yeah, you can't just get a field goal and then go off of that. We saw how well that was. I mean, the Utah State game, I think it was a field goal for first. Then they eventually got that touchdown against Wyoming. They only got that field goal.
Yeah.
So yeah, I understand that kicker's probably one of the best person on that team, but you can't rely on him to get 31 points every game.
Yeah, you can't have him kicking 7 or 8 field goals a game and hope to try and win. But it's a game where the Wolfpack have to get into it early. You have to try and get some momentum going. And I know Coach Norvell and the staff aren't huge on trick plays, But maybe in the first half, throw two or so in there, one or two trick plays in there, just to see if it'll work, just to maybe get a spark going, just to maybe get, I mean, just to get something going. It just seems like these last two games, like a flat soda. There's just no fizz to the offense right now.
I'd like to see some more flea flickers. Those are always fun to watch.
Yeah, especially with a young quarterback out there. Let him get into space a little bit. Use a little creativity. See what you can do, especially the way that Devontae Lee and Tua have been running together of late. If you can get that going, get Carson with a little bit of creativity and maybe rolling out with a little bit of trick plays or just some plays that maybe you've wanted to try but haven't had the right position to try maybe later on in games. Try it in the first quarter. Try it in the first half. Try something that just a little out of the box for your offense moving forward in this game. So I think it's going to help you. I think it's going to help the pack a lot moving forward, especially, Amari Davis for New Mexico, kind of leading the way with that ground attack, their quarterback situation. I think they've had some injuries at quarterback this year they've been fighting through like the Wolfpack have. So two teams coming in on losing streaks. Only one's going to be able to break it. I feel like with Nevada being at home, they are the ones set up to do that, especially, I mean, there's got to be frustration in that locker room. There's got to be frustration on that sideline. So the most important thing for this coaching staff right now is try to find a way to get these young men to harness that. I don't know what the pregame talk is right now. I don't know what those conversations are like. But if I were the coach in there, take it one play at a time, keep breathing, and let's just talk play by play. Got to keep working. We got to try and beat them on every down. Just take the little things as you go and don't try to get caught up in the whole game aspect of it as you're going in there, because I think that's what's happened is that they had such a promising start to the year and this little bit of a drop off. They're trying to kind of recover themselves, but they're trying to do it in huge chunks instead of just going one bit at a time and slowly rebuilding themselves back up. So I think if they do that and they attack New Mexico drive by drive, they could walk out of that stadium tomorrow night with a win and getting back over 500.
I feel like it's going to be a very big defensive battle between the two teams.
It could.
I mean, just looking at the scores, I don't really watch New Mexico Lobo football, you know, but just looking at the scores, it looks like the Lobos kind of have a decent defense going in there. So, I mean, just because they held up to Wyoming with like the 31-10 or whatever, or 25-10, and you know, Nevada was 31-3 on that. So they obviously had some sort of a defense sitting inside there against the Wyoming team, right? So I feel like it's going to be a pretty heavy defensive battle. But as long as we can strike first and keep that momentum going like we did in the beginning of the year, like in that Purdue game, then we should. And with Carson Strong coming back and us not really going to be like, oh, we're going to start with Malik, then we're going to go over to Solano, and then we'll just kind of let Carson sit over here. Starting with Carson, the guy who started the run off with having such great games, you're right. I think that's going to be the biggest key here.
Yeah, got to get on the board quickly. Not just on the board. Got to get into the end zone early and just try to make it tough for New Mexico to get back in it. So fingers crossed. We'll hope that happens. You can catch the game and the pregame here on ESPN Radio 94.5 tomorrow night. I almost forgot the point. 94.5 tomorrow night. Mr. Ramey will be on the call. So be sure to tune in for that. And let's start talking about some other PAC sports going on. Soccer has their last game of the season tonight down in Vegas. They'll play UNLV for their final game. Nevada trying to finish the season 13-4-7 in conference. Should they win tonight, they could also end their season on a two-game winning streak, and I hope they do for that purpose. This is a team that's worked really hard. Coach Otagaki has put a lot of effort into this season so far. They've had so many close, heartbreaking defeats this year in overtime or just one loss or one-goal losses off a late goal. So I hope they can go down there to UNLV, get a good win over your rival to end the season on a two-game winning streak, and really look forward to next year for this Nevada soccer team. And then the volleyball team broke their five-game losing streak last night, beating conference opponents Utah State here at home 3-0. Opened up 25-20, and then womanhandled. I don't know. Either way, they beat up on Utah State in the second set, 25-12, and finished it off 25-18 there in the third set. Nevada bettering Utah State in pretty much every category. Brianna Souza led the way with 16 kills. Dallin Burns, Kayla Spevic, and Mandalay Renan all had an ace. Brianna Souza also led the way with 6 blocks. Then, of course, Dallin Burns with her 43 assists, and Kayla Foa led the way with 12 digs for the pack. They host Boise State tomorrow. tomorrow morning here in Reno at 11 a.m. Then the undefeated swim and dive team at 4-0 is in action as well tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Also against Boise State. Look at that, a couple different Broncos teams coming to Reno. You get their booties handed to them. Let's hope. Let's hope. And then the cross country team has their Mountain West Championship going down today up in Logan, Utah, where it's a nice, sprightly 39 degrees Fahrenheit up there. That's some good running weather. Hope they brought some tights and some Under Armour. Otherwise, I've run in that kind of weather, bare skin, because I ran cross country and track in high school, and obviously up in Incline Village and in Lake Tahoe, you know. Just like down here, it gets very cold towards the end of the season. And, man, if you forgot your Under Armour, your long-sleeve Under Armour, some tights for your legs, whoo, better be mentally ready for that.
You don't just warm up as, like, the friction is going as you run or anything?
You do, but
– not enough?
There's some cases where if it's early – because some races, if, like, if it's a Saturday race, it could be at, like, 9 or 10 a.m. So if it's a Friday – after, because we had Friday afternoon races like at Wattell or North Tahoe, and those wouldn't be too bad. It's, like, 3 or 4 o'clock, sun's still out. You could do with that. If it was, like, a 9 or 10 a.m. start – ooh, especially if it was on grass, because then you get like dew kicked up on your leg, and it would get even colder. Yeah, so hopefully they brought some good running wear. But they're up there trying to win their Mountain West Championship today. And the basketball team, the men's basketball team, had their second preseason game on Wednesday against Colorado Christian. Beat them 86-55. Had a 42-23 lead at the half. So once again, another solid preseason game where Nevada looking good. I think our boss here, Mr. Ken Allen, pointed out that first preseason game, kind of the same thing for Nevada. More of a second-half performance, came out of the blocks a little bit slower in that first preseason game. I felt like this one was a full-game effort. They had 42 points in the first half, 44 points in the second half, so you could see that production kind of equaling its way through the two halves. Gave up a few more points, about 10 or so more points in the second half than the first, but when you can score and you can outscore guys like that in the first half, you set yourself up with a little bit of cushion there in the second half to do that. Jalen Harris led the way with 26 points. Lindsey Drew and Zane Meeks each led with 9 rebounds. And then just a slew of Pack players had 3 assists. But Nazir Zauza led the team with 2 steals as well, so some happy hands there. And the women's basketball team in their only preseason game against William Jessup. Are you ready for this, Sean?
I'm ready.
Nevada beat William Jessup 102-56.
Wow.
Yeah. How you like that for a preseason game from the women's team? 102 points in their exhibition game. That is awesome. Margulie Effa had 20 points, led the team there. Dom Phillips led the way in boards with 6 rebounds. Then Jen Williams had 8 assists and 4 steals for the Pack, who opened up their season Tuesday against St. Mary's, the same day the men's teams opened up against Utah. And then baseball had 2 exhibition games this past couple weeks, where they swept San Francisco in 2 games and then split with Cal on a doubleheader that went 9 innings in one and 7 innings in the other. So some good starts, some good-looking Wolfpack teams out there right now. So if you can, get out there, support the volleyball team, the swim and dive team, the football team. It's a fun weekend for Pack Sports here in Reno. When we come back from the break, we will, in case you missed any of the coaches' show from this past Wednesday, we'll share with you our conversation, mine and John Ramey's, with the head football coach, Mr. Jay Norvell, about New Mexico coming up tomorrow. And that's coming up after the break here from the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, if you weren't able to catch the coach's show this past Wednesday, or if you were too busy yelling into the phone at some of our people here at the station and weren't able to catch the coach's show because you were distracted, allow us to share some of that with you. We got the chance, myself and Mr. John Ramey, the voice of the Wolfpack, as we normally do on Wednesdays during college football season, got to sit down with head coach Jay Norvell, talk to him about the game coming up against New Mexico, and it all starts with Mr. Ramey talking about some privileges that he enjoys.
And also one of the privileges I get is that I get to talk to sports people about big moments. Like
remember a Super Bowl a couple years ago, the Philly special, I texted you, right?
That's right.
That's like, that is there. That's a non-dollar value to my job. I can text football experts about plays like that.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
All right. Time for the Baselite big blocker of the game. Last game at Wyoming. Who is the Baselite big blocker of the game, Coach?
Got to give it to Miles Beach.
Miles Beach,
yes, sir,
is the Baselite big blocker of the game for the Wolfpack, brought to you by Baselite Concrete Products. Remember, don't just fight at Baselite. It's, speaking of blocking, the Union continues to be a kind of a pivot point right now. And I think the season.
Yep.
And I believe Beach's performance sliding over to left tackle has actually been rather strong. I haven't broken down film with Coach McClure, but I felt that he has held his own. But I feel like it's making it difficult to assess the overall effectiveness of the offense.
Yeah.
Carson Strong, the quarterback, was sacked three times, and he was under duress throughout the Wyoming game. Where is the Union now, and what do we need to see?
Well, I think we have to be realistic as coaches. You know, that group is young. We have some new pieces in there. The communication hasn't been great all year. And so we're growing there, and we really have to see what things can our offensive line do well and not try to put them in very tough situations. And we have to do some things offensively that will allow them to have success because we're going to go as far as our line will take us. And so with our young quarterback, with Carson in there, he does a good job when he does have time. He was under duress at times in this last game. And we got to do things to get the ball out quick. We got to run the football to settle down the front. And we got to do some things to keep them off balance, move the throwing spot a little bit. And all those things can help the offensive line. So we've got to take that on as coaches, and that's what I've been really looking at this week.
Moving the throwing spot, is that where the quarterback stands in the pocket when he throws?
Correct.
I'm not familiar with that
term. Correct. And, you know, we'd like to get the ball out quicker. You know, our passing game is – really determined on getting the ball out of your hand quick before the defense can react. And then also we like to move the pocket with play action, with sprint out, with nakeds, with draws. All those things can really help the offensive line in their protection, in their run game. So we've got to be conscious of that. We've got to lean on that and help them play with more confidence and more success, and that'll help our offense a lot.
And two players that have really done a great job in your offense is Romeo Dubs and Elijah Cooks. They've had great seasons this year. Dubs had a great catch at the Wyoming game where he went up over a defender. So I'm curious, when you're having kind of switching quarterbacks around like this and trying to find the right fit, whether it's injury or just strategy, how much do you talk to those guys about, hey, making the extra effort to get to the pass, or talk to the quarterback about maybe something they see down further in the field?
Sure.
What's the kind of communication with them?
Well,
like,
I think Carson has really good chemistry with those guys. They work so hard in the off season, but also we want to get those guys going. We want to get Romeo with his hands on the ball. We want to get Elijah with his hands on the ball. That will really help those guys going. You know, good receivers get anxious. You know, Romeo likes to have his hands on the ball early. And when he does, he gets more confidence. He's more involved in the game. So we're really conscious on leaning on that in our schemes, especially in our plays early.
And we've talked about your secondary before, and Burdale Robbins came up with a big interception in the game against Wyoming. How have you seen them kind of evolve through these last two tough games on the road, now coming back home? How do you think that'll help them set up for this last stretch of the season?
I'm so proud of Burdale. You know, he's just really stepped up in the last couple of weeks when we didn't have Daniel Brown out there. You know, Daniel's one of the best corners in the league. But Burdale really stepped up, competed hard. He's really fought hard in the game and tried to make plays. And he's made some excellent plays the last 2 weeks. That's really going to help us. I was really proud of Austin Arnold and Tyson Williams. Those two kids are improving every week they go on the field. And their play is really showing and helping us in the secondary and on defense. And we've got to continue that. You know, that's the biggest thing that we got to do now, is strive to move forward, show improvement here in these last four games, and really finish strong.
It's the Wolfpack Coaches Show, presented by Dolan Lexus. We are live at Bully Sports Bar and Grill. The World Series will be rejoined in progress at the conclusion of this Coaches Show at 7 o'clock Pacific time. Right now it is 1-0 Houston and the bottom of the fourth inning, and we'll keep you up to date on that game at seeds. Houston is batting with one out and nobody aboard, leading 1-0 in Game 7 of the World Series. Also, if you're listening to this right now and you want to come down and watch the game, come to Bullies. The game is on. We're having the show. And we're giving away tickets. We have 4 pair of tickets for this Saturday night's game at Mackey Stadium against New Mexico. The Wolfpack is 4-4. The Lobos 2-6. And the kickoff is at 7:30 at Mackey Stadium. So come on down, watch Game 7, and pick up some tickets for this Saturday's game. Also, 2 pair of tickets we are giving away to the basketball season opener. That is on Tuesday, November 5th, against Utah at Lawler Event Center. So if you cannot hear the game right now, come on down and watch the game. Hang out, watch the rest of the coach's show, and maybe get some tickets. Okay, New Mexico. The Lobos are coached by Bob Davey, who has had a long and successful career. He was once the head coach at Notre Dame.
Yep.
And I was looking, his coaching tree includes Charlie Strong. Correct me if I'm wrong, but did your path cross with Charlie's at Texas?
Yep. I was at Texas with Charlie for one season, yes, sir.
Is there anybody else in that Davey coaching tree? You'd see, you've been around a while, so I can just throw, if there's an old ball coach out there, I'm like, I know you probably know somebody with Davey.
Yeah, I've got some really good friends that have worked with him. Kevin Cosgrove was his defense coordinator a year ago, and Tim Cassie's very close with him, a guy who I was with at Arizona State. So there's not too many guys I haven't passed with in this profession. So really experienced coach, you know, has done a great job over the years, was a really good broadcaster as well. He did a couple of our games when I was at Oklahoma, and
test of football acumen.
That's right. I tease him about that every time he did a couple of our games when I was at OU and made some comments that I appreciated. But that's another story for another time. But a good, really great guy, experienced coach, and you know, we got a lot of great coaches in this league. You know, and I'm just a pleasure to be able to compete with these guys every week.
And the Lobos this year, they've had to start 3 different quarterbacks. Yeah. They've lost 5 in a row. And so maybe fans go, okay, New Mexico's lost 5 in a row. Good for the Wolfpack. But I think you're probably thinking as a coach, they're a wounded tiger, right?
Yeah, I mean, we prepare every week for a team's best effort. And we really don't look too much of what their streak is. We look at the problems that they're having on film and we try to exploit their weaknesses. But, you know, I guess my 6 years in the NFL, you know, when you play somebody that's down, they're prideful and they want to play good. So you can never assume that they're not going to be at their best.
I don't like to drench the listeners in stats. It's a stat really has to jump out for me to share it. But a couple numbers hop up off the page with New Mexico, and one of them is they give up on average more than 500 yards a game in offense. And the other one is they got a running back named Amari Davis who averages 6 yards per carry.
Yep.
Does your game plan adjust to those or any kind of big numbers like that, or would you guys want to do what you want to do offensively, defensively, independent of those?
It's a combination. Obviously, we look at every team and what their weaknesses are, what things they have problems with, but at the same time, you can't vary much from what you do well. And so we obviously want to get Toa going. We want to lean on him in the running game. I think that'll settle our union down. I think it'll settle Carson down. We also want to get our playmakers involved and do a lot of things that our kids feel comfortable with. Maybe give a couple wrinkles and see some things that we've seen on film that they've struggled with. So it's really important that we do that. We got to control their running game. You know, this team has had problems with turnovers, and so we really want to force the action with them as well, see if we can steal some possessions from them. And at the same time, you know, we've done a better job of late protecting the ball. We got to continue doing that, and Carson's really got to see throws, and we got to take care of it.
That was our conversation. My name is Mr. John Ramey's with the head coach, Jaden Norvell. And, you know, hopefully he's right. Hopefully Carson Strong in the offense gets back into that comfortable state of mind. He can see the opportunities and take advantage of them. When we come back from the break, we will share mine and Mr. John Ramey's conversation with the baseball coach, Mr. TJ Bruce. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. So on the coach's show, not only did we get to talk with head coach Jay Norvell, but we also got to talk with the head coach of the Wolfpack men's baseball team, Mr. TJ Bruce. And once again, Mr. Ramey's talking about the special privileges he gets in the world of sports that he enjoys.
We are talking baseball because you and I exclusively watch premium sporting events together. We watch the Super Bowl together. It's Game 7 of the World Series. So it's like I feel very privileged to get to watch or to experience the maximum baseball event with a maximum baseball brain. And you're a fan. Like, you like to watch playoffs, right?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love I think it's for 162 games, you know, these guys do play a little different game than college baseball or high school. And then all of a sudden when October hits, these guys ramp up into college baseball. I feel it's college baseball to the max, whether it's moving guys over. You got matchups, you know, all the little stuff. You saw Chirinos try to bunt earlier in the game. They had first and second. Really what they're trying to do is allow Springer to hit, you know, because Reddick hits ninth, flip the lineup over, allow Springer to hit with two guys on base. So the playoffs for college fans and college baseball fans is great. It's because it's exactly what we're teaching day in and day out.
Gerrit Cole is warming in the bullpen for Houston. There was just a leadoff single through the shift on the right side for the Astros. Runner at first, nobody out. Bottom of the fifth, Houston 1, Washington nothing. Gerrit Cole is a guy you and I both had the privilege of, well, you worked with him and I covered him when he was in college at UCLA. What's Gerrit Cole like to everybody who now knows who he is?
Well, you know, Gerrit's from Southern Cal. He was actually, when I was coaching at Long Beach State, he was still in high school. He was at Orange Lutheran High School in Orange County. And obviously the talent was huge. The ceiling was ginormous. It was as big of a ceiling as you can probably put on somebody. But then had the privilege to watch up close and in person and see him work day in and day out. And, you know, he worked under or worked alongside with Coach Savage. And just his competitiveness, his desire, his will to be elite. And he wasn't afraid of a challenge. And so I'm not at all surprised by the success that Gerrit's having. And he's just as good off the field as he is on the field. I mean, he's A-plus human being, A-plus person, and somebody that I think a lot of young kids need to look up to.
The one thing I say about Gerrit when I say, he's a guy I've watched and had the privilege to watch develop, he's a great teammate.
No doubt. I mean, there's you know, being a position player coach, you know, I marveled a lot on Fridays when we got a chance to see him pitch. There wasn't a whole lot of contact, should I say, behind him. So I was trying to keep the infielders a little bit on their toes and locked in the game. But you just marvel at how he went about his work and in between innings. And you see it now. I mean, he's the biggest cheerleader on the bench when he's not pitching. Yeah. He's the first guy out of the dugout. And all those elite players have that, and they have that. That's part of that it factor, I think. And you go back to Derek Jeter. It's sad to say you go back to a time where Derek was playing, but you go back to Derek when he was playing. He was always the first guy that dug out. And like I said, these elite players have it, and Gerrit is elite.
Coach Bruce, you are now in your fifth season. You're going into your fifth season as the head coach of Wolfpack Baseball. You've reached the Mountain West Tournament all 4 years to this point. You've always had the pack in the postseason. We're talking to you because it's fall ball scrimmages. And you played San Francisco, the Dons, and you played California, the Golden Bears. And, well, we're here to brag on you a bit. You guys played well. You beat up on both teams.
Yeah, you know, the NCAA input a rule about 2 years ago which would allow college baseball teams to play up to two fall games. And you can play those two games at any time. The old rule used to be whatever you play in the fall, you got to take off your 56 in the spring. But now we got 56 allotted in the spring. You get a chance to play two fall games. So we went to USF. We did the whole road show, bust over, stayed the night in the hotel, met as a team that night, went over USF that night, met again in the morning on Sunday morning, and then played two games. And we played really well. I thought, you know, one of the biggest deals for us was we didn't make an error in 18 innings, which is hard to do. I don't care what level you're playing at, but it's hard to do. And we pitched out of some problems. We ended up putting on some runs. And I thought our guys – I was really excited with the way our guys went about the day. There was no letdown. The Jalen McLaughlins of the world, who has been a mainstay in our lineup for the 3 years that I – or the 4 years I've been here, the 3 years he's been here, you know, when he got taken out of the game late in the 12th or 13th inning, he was the first guy on the top step. And a lot of our guys were doing that, and it was good to see.
Nevada fans, make sure to check out Shields for all your Wolfpack gear. Shields right there with you at the Legends at Sparks Marina. You also have new coaches this year. I think that's a heck of a coaching staff you guys have now with Troy Buckley mm-hmm. and with Abe Alvarez.
Yeah, I think everybody knows wherever they work, whatever they do. I think it's all about who you surround yourself with. And I'm very fortunate to have this staff. I got a mentor. Actually, my former coach, he was an assistant coach when I was playing at Long Beach State in 2004. Had a chance to work with Troy for a few years there at Long Beach State. And then he took over as a head coach. I went to go work for Coach Savage at UCLA. And then, you know, fast forward, really, it's been about 10 years since we've been in the same dugout. And it's actually just been a baseball conversation, really, since the day that him and I have met. And to hire somebody like him, a guy that's been a head coach, a guy that's been a pitching coordinator in professional baseball, I think, hands down, he's the best pitching coach in the country. I think we're very, very fortunate to have a guy like Troy here. And then, you know, to give Abe opportunity or have Abe have the opportunity to be a paid assistant, that's I've been in Abe's shoes, being a volunteer, and all you want is you want that next crack, that next shot at being the paid assistant, and there was no better person that our program could have hired. You're talking, we got a World Series champion on our staff, a guy that actually played for Buck, pitched for Buck. Mm-hmm. So that there's big time connection, there's big time chemistry, synergy, whatever word you want to use on our staff. I feel like we're all knowing what everybody's thinking. I can be on one side of the field and these guys can be on the other, and we just somehow come together, and I think our players feel that. So I'm very, very privileged to have those two guys, and I think Northern Nevada is privileged to have these two guys, not only just baseball coaches, but what they bring off the field, mentorship, friendship, their faith. It's all the above. So I'm very fortunate.
Coach, I love your schedule this year. You got a lot of tough at a conference competition with Michigan, Oregon, Utah. What do you like about those kind of competitions being on your schedule, having three teams like that, and what do you think that'll benefit your team as you get into conference play later on?
Well, number one, you got to win on the road, and that's something. No matter wherever you're playing in a school across the country, whether it's cold weather, good weather, it's whatever it may be, Omaha's won on the road. So that's the bottom line. So you better get comfortable on the road. And I've been fortunate to be in Omaha for about 30 days. And it's grueling. It's a grind. So I love putting our guys to the test and putting them on the road. We open at Portland, come back home, go to Oregon, come back home for a stretch there where we got three home games or three weekends. Hofstra and Wichita State in a tournament, bringing Sac State, who's obviously – done a great job, and Reggie's a phenomenal coach, bringing Cal Baptist, who won almost 40 games this year. And then you go on the road to the national champion runner-up, Michigan Wolverines, and then you got a Pac-12 team in Utah who just won the Pac-12 3 years ago. But everything has to happen on the road, and we're not afraid of anybody. We've made that clear since the day this staff has got here and since the day I took over 4 years ago. We'll play anybody, anywhere. And that's the mentality. So it's time to, like as I tell our players, you better have your ankles taped.
He's the skipper, TJ Bruce. It's the Wolfpack Coaches Show presented by Dolan Lexus.
Big thank you there to TJ Bruce and Coach Norvell, as well as Coach Brendan Bray, the swim and dive team we also got to talk to. And thank you to Learfield ING College for letting us use those tidbits from the coaches show as well. Remember to catch that for the rest of this month, the rest of the month of November up until Thanksgiving. It'll be on Wednesday, 6 to 7. Then after that, during basketball season, kind of fluctuates between Tuesday and Thursday and some Wednesdays. So we'll keep you up to date at that. But don't miss the coaches show if you do get the chance to hear it on the radio or come down to Bullies off of Rob Drive and catch it live. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to take a look at Formula One as Free Practice 2 is going on right now in Austin, Texas. Also going to talk about some of the new rules and regulations that have come down for the 2021 reboot of Formula One. So all that's coming up here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. Practice 2 going down right now in Austin, Texas, watching it on the screen. Of course, getting ready for the United States Grand Prix happening this Sunday. And it's an all-Ferrari show right now. Leclerc topping the timing sheets. He's ahead of his teammate Sebastian Vettel by about 3.5 tenths of a second right now. Although Hamilton just set the fastest lap, of course he did. Who else is going to right now in practice two? He was so off in practice one. You knew they had to either be trying something or they thought a part of the car was going to be there that wasn't. But this is more like what we've seen from Hamilton the last, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 seasons, where he's just dominated on Mercedes team. But it should be an entertaining weekend. I believe that all Hamilton has to do essentially is finish in front of Valtteri Bottas, and Hamilton will win his 6th Drivers' Championship. Bottas doesn't just have to beat Hamilton. I think he has to beat him by about 20 or so points to stay in it, because after the United States Grand Prix, there will be 2 races left, which means you'll have a maximum of 52 points available should you win each race and get the fastest lap point in each race. And right now, I believe he is 74 points back of Hamilton. So with that math right there, he's going to have to outscore him by at least 20 or so points to stay in it. I don't see that happening, because essentially that would mean that Bottas would have to finish first and win the race and have Hamilton finish, you know, 8th or 9th. And just don't see that happen. So it's essentially just a done deal. Hamilton will clinch this Drivers' Championship this weekend in the United States Grand Prix. So with that, we can start to look forward to some of the future happenings with Formula One. Of course, next season, they'll have 22 races on the calendar instead of 21. The German Grand Prix will be dropped. They're going to reintroduce the Dutch Grand Prix, which will essentially be an all-out parade for Max Verstappen being the only Dutchman in the field. It will be his home race. And the Belgian Grand Prix and the Italian Grand Prix was always just full, and the Austrian Grand Prix were always full of Verstappen supporters. So his true home Grand Prix next year is going to be quite a sight for him. And they're going to introduce a brand new race next season to the calendar. The first ever Vietnamese Grand Prix will be on the calendar at a partial track. So part of it will be a racing facility, like a lot of these tracks are on the Formula One calendar, and the other half, like Australia, will be like public roads that get blocked off and changed with the special curbs and everything for the Formula One race. So interesting to see how that goes. But then we get to 2021, where we'll have new regulations, new rules, and a lot of stuff came down about that new season this past week. So we'll kind of approach it section by section here. So we'll start with the cars. A lot of drivers have complained over the last 2-3 seasons that the cars just keep getting bigger and bigger. It makes it harder to race, makes it harder to leave enough space for guys when they're trying to pass. It's tough to operate when you have these cars getting bigger and bigger out on a track and you have to obey track limits. So they're going to do some sweeping body work across the car to make it a little more compact. They're going to have bigger 18-inch tires and 18-inch rims to go along. And they're also going to try to make these cars sustainable to the point where they can follow closely behind each other. Right now, when cars get behind one another and they get into what's called dirty air, cars are losing 40 to 50% of the downforce on the car. And the downforce is what allow these cars to go as fast as, you know, they can possibly go. So when you get behind cars, you get into that dirty air, you're losing about half the downforce on your car, which is what's preventing a lot of close racing on a lot of these circuits. So they're going to redesign these cars so that when you get behind a car into quote-unquote dirty air, the design of it helps lift that dirty air up and over the car behind, so you're only losing about 10% of your downforce, which will allow cars to get right up behind each other and just encourage close, tight, tough racing, which is what we want to see. And then, of course, they'll have new shape to the front wing. They'll have new suspension, which will be a lot simpler as well. They're going to do some floor work. So the cars are going to be a little more uniform and a little bit more compact, which will hopefully bring some tighter and some more fun racing. And you'll get some new rules. They're going to have rules that are designed to, again, closer, more competitive racing. Small teams are going to have chances, relying on more of like just car and driver skill with some of these car redesigns. And there's also going to have some certain standardized parts that will be introduced, so you don't have, you know, one team with a miles better brake pad or whatever it might be. So you're going to have some standardized parts that allow cars to be, again, on the same level, so it comes down to more of driver responsibility. Then another interesting part of the 2021 regulations are financial, kind of like a cap. You know how football teams or basketball teams have cap space, or if they hit their cap, they can't spend any more money. So they're going to put a $175 million cap on each team per year for on-track performance. So that means in terms of what you do to your car and helping it on track during a race, each team is going to have $175 million a year to work with them, which prevents teams like Mercedes or Ferrari or Red Bull spending millions more, hundreds of thousands more than, let's say, an Alfa Romeo or a Racing Point to get ahead so much further on the track. So with cars, they're going to be made a little more compact, a little more standardized across the board, and also this financial restriction that is hopefully going to give these smaller teams like an Alfa Romeo or a Racing Point or a Toro Rosso or a Haas, it'll give them a chance to contend with a Mercedes and a Ferrari, and again, leave it more down to driver performance and how they can handle the car on the track and make it more competitive in that sense. And the last bit of news that came down about 2021 regulations will be the weekend structure with Formula One moving to more of a 22 race season throughout the next couple years. They're going to, instead of having the driver press conference on Thursday, have it on Friday, and maybe compound a couple of the practice sessions as well, just to take some of the wear and tear off the drivers, off the cars, and off the crews as they're getting lengthier seasons as we go along. Because you look back at even like the 70s and 80s or even the 90s, 17, 18 race seasons. Now they're up to 21. They'll have 22 next year, and that those extra 4 or 5 might not sound like a lot, but you got to remember that Formula One's going all across the world. They compete on pretty much every continent except for Africa and Antarctica. They're in North America, South America, Europe, Australia, Asia. They're going all over the world. So to organize that, to get the right parts, the right people to where they need to go, 4 or 5 extra races can cause havoc if you don't do it correctly. So it's good to see that Formula One is thinking of teams, thinking of fans, and thinking of drivers when they're creating these new 2021 regulations. And hopefully it does lead to just some really tight competitive racing, because we've seen that at certain tracks. Austria, we usually always get competitive racing at the Red Bull Ring. We also see it Singapore, although not a lot of passing spots. It's a pretty technical track, so you can't really get away from people, so that creates some good close racing. The Italian Grand Prix, Monza, allows for a lot of high-speed close racing. So hopefully we can see even more of that at those tracks and get that at other tracks where we're not seeing as much of it. And we'll see what happens with the reverse grids next year. The races still haven't been announced where they're going to try that or if they're going to try that for certain. So we'll see how that goes. But watching the United States Grand Prix, the practice session again right now, it's pretty much Red Bull, Mercedes, and Ferrari. And as exciting as that is to see kind of the top three teams and their drivers duel it out, I'd love to see a Racing Point or an Alfa Romeo or somebody just get up there on McLaren and get up there and challenge them. Even if it's every other race in 2021, even if it's still somewhat as dominant of a performance from Mercedes and Ferrari, if we can get just the little upsets in there, you know, if we can get the one McLaren that wins a race there or the one Racing Point that wins a race there, that just makes the season feel more special, and it can help expand the championship fight instead of having it, you know, the Constructors' Championship be over already for a couple weeks. Drivers' Championship most likely going to end this Sunday. So with two races to go, instead of just having it be a fun showing of some of the best drivers out there and to watch, just to watch to see who can win for bragging rights, we could have championship fights later on, continuing later on down the line. Hopefully, that is what happens. But again, P2 right now, Hamilton in first, Leclerc in second. They're going to break, but it's been a pretty competitive couple practice sessions this morning, and then of course with qualifying tomorrow and the race on Sunday, we'll see how it goes. That does it for the first hour of the show. We're going to throw it back to SportsCenter here at the top of the hour to get an update on what's going on in the world of sports out there. And then when we come back from that break, we'll have our pal Ian Epstein on the phone talking about prop swap and what went down with the World Series and what to look forward to for football, basketball, and hockey now moving forward. Of course, Mr. Sean Cloud after that will have his fantasy predictions and lineups to set for week 9 of the NFL season. We'll also react to Thursday Night Football and give you our Sunday picks. That's all coming up in the second hour, but first, I throw it back to SportsCenter here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.